So we're starting a quarter on the United Kingdom. What do you know about the United Kingdom? Because I can tell you I didn't know near of what I know now. But what do you know? What do you think about when you think of the United Kingdom?
The first three kings.
The first three kings. What else? So the growth of a nation, David being a godly man, building up the nation, and then Solomon being able to build the temple. You know, those are some major things that happened in the United Kingdom. What else? To me, this strikes me as the kind of the pinnacle of the Hebrew nation. This is, you're kind of building up to that geopolitically. You know, they become a large nation. They were a nation of people, but now they are governed. And so they've been governed from the time of Mount Sinai as a theocracy. God led them through priests, and then we went to judges and then to this. But at this point in time, you think about when you get to Solomon, you had people all over the world coming, the Queen of Sheba, and it was the nation was known for its wealth and power, its status. Question that I have, and as we'll get into this, is at that point in time, was it, you know, a spiritually great nation? And we'll discuss that as we continue to go through. But I would think of it as the United Kingdom being that kind of that peak, especially when you hit David to Solomon. It's the peak of the Hebrew nation before the divide and then and on. But to understand the United Kingdom, and I think you'll understand this by the material, I think we need to go back. We need to go back and kind of look at the establishment and foundation of the people and the nation itself. So this is a theocracy. You know, this time frame that we're going to be covering is going to be about 1050 B.C. to 930 B.C. And we're going to go back to around the 1500 mark. All my dates are approximates, so give me a little bit of wiggle room there. But that's approximately where we're going to be at. What I want to look at this morning is I want to look at what Deuteronomy tells us about Moses talking to the people. Telling them as they're getting ready to enter into the promised land, he retells them the laws. I want to look at some things as they establish this nation, what God wants them to do. So, listen to the statutes and judgments. He wants his people to listen and obey. So, my first question is who will hear and for what purpose these statutes and judgments, or these statutes and ordinances? The Israelites. Only the Israelites?
Those who lived among them.
To me, this is a really important part of what we're going to see as we go through the United Kingdom. So look over at Deuteronomy chapter 4 for a second. In Deuteronomy 4, it says, "Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and judgments which I am teaching you to perform, so that you may live and go in and take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you." Down to verse 5. "See, I have taught you statutes and judgments, just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should do thus in the land where you are entering to possess it." Verse 6. "To keep and do them, for that is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who will hear all these statutes and say, 'Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.' For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as is the Lord our God whenever we call on him? Or what great nation is there that has statutes and judgments as righteous as this whole law which I am setting before you today?" This idea that you are to keep them and do them, for that is the wisdom and your understanding. But it's also in the sight of the peoples who will hear all these statutes and say, "Surely this is a great nation. Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people." It was for the Israelites, and we'll see that in just a second. Those are who are hearing it. But I want to think about for a second the people. When we think about what God is doing, He's establishing this theocracy, and as we go through this, we'll discuss this in more depth, and we'll see some things. But the idea is that this nation will reflect on God. What happens with them reflects on God. You think about being the light of the world. You think about people seeing this nation and seeing God close to them. Verse 7, for what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as is the Lord our God whenever we call on him? They represent this almighty being. They are the ambassadors to this world around them. They are a chosen people, and we'll get to that in a second about how they were chosen. But that's the understanding, is they are a reflection of God and his will and what he is trying to do. Now, is this a foreign concept to us? Come on, y'all got to give me some feedback.
No, I think
exactly. Our kids are a reflection of us. What our kids do reflects back on us. As they get older, they're making their own decision. But especially in this, these people were a reflection of God. And we'll see some things about that. But I also think about us today as Christians. You know, you can look over. You can see some similarities in the idea of go to 1 Peter 3. First Peter 2:9, it says, but you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people of God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of the darkness into the marvelous light. Verse 12. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the things which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. You go over to Philippians 2:14-15. It says, it talks about behavior, being blameless and innocent. Be above reproach, because they are lights of the world. Okay, that's the same thing. You know, our behavior today can bring someone to Christ. We can represent what God's will is and what he can do for us, how he has an effect on our life, and the same thing there. So this idea of being a representative or an ambassador of what God's will is or of God, I don't think that's a foreign concept. All right, so who are the statutes and judgments for, or who is the covenant with? And this is where you're going to have to read my mind a little bit. She read my mind. That's right. So God had made this. He'd made a covenant, but they disobeyed. So everybody was wiped out except for Joshua and Caleb. So there, Moses is rehashing this, and he is saying, with us. Let me go back to Deuteronomy 5. You're right. Let's see. The verse 3. The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, with all those of us alive here today. And there's that not but phrase. Did he make that covenant with their fathers? Yes. But he's emphasizing that I'm making it with you. The fathers aren't there anymore. They were punished. I'm making it with you. So we can clear it up. You know, it's with those people in that time. So as we talk about what this nation was built on, what these statutes and ordinances are, he's talking to them about them there, not what was taught to their fathers. He is expressing it to them and what they should be doing. So what was the purpose of learning these statutes and ordinances?
They would prosper in the land.
That's not you reading my mind. Again, ambiguous at best on these questions. Go ahead, Susan. Okay, so that's where I was focusing in on, the idea of purpose of learning them. I see three things in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 6 of Deuteronomy. It says, now this is the commandment and the statutes of the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you are going over to possess it, so that you and your son and your grandsons might fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I have commanded you all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. I see that as kind of a threefold thing. You do it so that you might fear the Lord. And in fearing the Lord, you will keep his statutes and his commandments. I'm teaching them to you so that you might understand what God would have you to do, and so that you will keep them and be obedient to his will, and so that your days may be prolonged. Now, what are the results of keeping them? That's the question. Elizabeth, that's your answer.
Obey God and you'll prosper.
obey God and you'll prosper. What's another word for that? Or another phrase for that? That's right. I think about the idea of you will be blessed. I will bless you. He says, let's see, and he says, I will bless you. I will love you. I will multiply you in the verses that I provided. Now, it's interesting to me as you look at some of this, and I think I've got it written over here. You know, the things that he says he will do. If you do these things, you think about, again, they're representative of God. They're a reflection of God. So it's not all in what they do, but it's in what God does for them if they're obedient. So he says that he will multiply them. He will make not only the nation, the people, fertile, but their livestock will be fertile. The ground will be fertile. There would be no sickness. Think about that. As a nation of people, as he's continuing to grow, there would be no sickness. And then, in fact, he would put that sickness on their enemies. And then that they would consume all that the Lord set before them. And we'll talk in a second about how that's going to happen. But the idea that this nation is a reflection of God, what God does for them, as long as they're obedient, people will see. Like, man, look, they continue to grow and multiply, and they just continue to exponentially get larger. It says in Deuteronomy 11 that the rain will rain in its season. You think about being a farmer, you know, you're always praying for rain and in the right times. That rain, precipitation doesn't help you in the winter. It doesn't help you in the summer as much as you want it in the spring and kind of near the fall when you're ready for harvest. It's also interesting to me that he says over in 7:26, as he talks about this, this idea of blessing them. This 26, it's 22. They're going to be so blessed that he's going to have to incrementally allow them into the land. 7:22 says, the Lord your God will clear away the nations before you little by little. Could God clear the land for them complete? Yes. Could they do it immediately? Yes. But it's interesting that this is added. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beasts would grow too numerous for you. God's power is limited. He's like, look, we're going to slow it down a little bit, because if I put you in the land, then the wild beasts are going to be too numerous for you. It's going to take over. I'm going to do it incrementally. It's interesting to me, and that's just kind of a side note. But when he talks about blessing you, you're going to be blessed so much that I need to slow it down a little bit, because these wild beasts might overrun you. They're going to be they would grow too numerous for you. All right. And so how often should these be learned or taught? Meaning these statutes, these judgments, these ordinances. Continually. So look over at Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6, and then I put chapter 11 as well. They're mirrored statements. But it says, these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart, shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on your doorposts of your house and on your gates. And did he want them to actually do all that? Write them on the doorposts, write them on your frontals of your eyelids. Do you want? No. It's constant. Ever constant. You know, keep it in front of yourselves. Keep it in front of your mind. Keep it in front of your heart. Keep continually learning it so that you will live it. You kind of eat and breathe and sleep in it, that sort of thing. It's not by osmosis, but if you continue to study, that will reflect in your daily life and how you act, how you treat other people, and that sort of thing. That's how often it should be learned and should be taught. Now, as we go through this, you know, again, we talked a second ago about how this can mirror our relationship with God. The same thing, and we're blessed in a different way, but the idea that we, as a chosen race, a royal priesthood, we should be thinking about these same things. That we should be obeying his statutes and his ordinances. And I should have made this comment before. We will be looking at, you know, that as well. As we study this, you know, we aren't in the United Kingdom, but why is it written? For us to learn from. For us to gain some comprehension or understanding of how God deals with his people, what he wants from us, and what can we do, what can we take away from it. That's it, right here. We should be doing the same thing. I mean, now, don't swing too far the other way, because I do know people who do this. Like, I need to constantly read 10 hours a day, which means I'm going to forsake my other responsibilities, include work, home, family, that sort of stuff. That sounds crazy, but there are people who think you need to do that. No, that's not the case. But you need to ever be studying God's Word and be in it and live your life and take care of the other responsibilities that you have. But daily, we should be trying to study. We should be trying to contemplate. We should be trying to teach, to understand God's His will. And so we can see, as we talk about this United Kingdom, what God had for them when He established that nation, what He wants after, when He has, well, I said that nation, when He's going to establish a kingdom, what He did and what He wants from us as this new kingdom had been established in Christ, and what He wants us to do. Questions or comments? Oh, we're going to get y'all warmed up. I mean, come on. I mean, that's not the way this works for me. I'm a talker, but I'm a conversationalist too. We're going to have to get y'all going. All right. So then, warning to the people. So let's look over at Deuteronomy chapter 4. Now, we're talking about God's message to His people. He wants them to listen and obey. So He's telling them, listen to these statutes and these judgments, these ordinances. But He also, listen and obey my warning. This will come and play a key role later on in the time of the kings. So Deuteronomy 4:24. Excuse me. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. Let me back up. We'll go to 23. So watch yourselves that you do not forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which He made with you, and make for yourselves a graven image in the form of anything against which the Lord your God has commanded you. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. When you become the father of children and children's children, and have remained long in the land, and act corruptly, and make an idol in the form of anything, and do that which is evil in the sight of the Lord your God, so as to provoke Him to anger, I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that you will surely perish quickly from the land where you are going over to the Jordan to possess it. You shall not live long in it, but you will be utterly destroyed. The Lord will scatter you among the peoples. You will be left few in number among the nations where the Lord drives you. He warns them. Do not worship idols. Do not commit to idolatry. No graven images. That's not what it is. He is a consuming fire, a jealous God. We need to remember that today. Idol worship today or idolatry today can come in different forms than actually having an image in your house. It can come in a lot of different forms. Let's remember that our God is a consuming fire. He is a jealous God. We should always put Him first. And so He warns His people. Now,
Keith,
yes, ma'am.
Reverence and awe, and you know that was the problem. You whatever worship you do, you need to do it with reverence and awe, and understanding what God says, and obey it with even with that heart. And as we will study, the Israelites didn't do it, and that's when God pursued.
Yes, ma'am. You know, I'll get there in a second. Never mind. Get ahead of myself. Look over at Deuteronomy chapter 7. What's the warning in this context and why?
I said, don't let your children intermarry because they could be turned from serving God.
Yes, ma'am. So I'm telling you this because it's helped me. It's been great for me. And I don't know, this may be something we do again later on. But, you know, the study skills that I've learned over time and through here and other places, you know, when you read, you look for those words for, so that these kind of they make a point is made because or for that, so that. And so verse 4 is that to us. But here it says, furthermore, verse 3, you shall not intermarry with them. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, and you shall take their daughters for your sons. And here's an explanation as to why. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you and he will quickly destroy you. Not me. I can do it. Not me. I can do it. It's not going to happen to me, Lord. We need to understand that. You know, that person you're spending close time with is commanded to them, but he could see. He knew what was going to happen. You spend time with that person, you marry somebody who of another nation, they will turn your heart away. They will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. Is there application in that for us today? There is. There's application for us and for the people that we spend time with, the spouses or the spouses that we have or the people that we look to marry. That's applicable today. Does that mean it will happen to you? Does that mean you can't marry or spend time with those who aren't Christians? No. But it's a warning to us because that can happen. We used an illustration, I don't know, it's been 10 years ago. I was teaching some high school kids, and the idea of you have somebody stand on a chair, and then you have someone kneel down before them. All right, now you grab their arms, and I'm going to try to lift them up, and they're going to try to pull you down. What's easier? Pull them down. Doesn't mean you can't lift them up, but it's easier to pull them down. And there's that struggle that you're going to continually have. Am I saying it's wrong to marry non-Christians? Am I saying it's wrong to spend time with non-Christians? No, but let's be mindful of those things, especially here, you know, in the context of our study. You know, what would they do for the Hebrew nation? What would they do for the Israelites? They would turn their hearts away.
Mm-hmm. When they went into the land. So Joshua is also warning them, you know, so it's from heaven that this is real.
Yes. Yes. You can have an impact. And so the flip side of this, and this is what God's telling them too, you know, you reflect me, you represent me. We talked about this. You can be a shining light. By example, you can bring others to Christ. That's what we should try to be doing. But let's be mindful of the company that we keep, because it's really easy to have a reputation tarnished. It's really easy to be pulled down. Let's make sure that we are striving to be blameless and to follow the statutes and ordinances of God, just like he tells them here.
Chief,
yes, sir.
You started in verse 3, jump back up to verse 2. Had they followed God's plan in verse 2, there would have been a need for verse 3.
You're correct. Yep.
God's going to take care of the people.
Mm-hmm.
He told him he's going to give them the land. He's going to destroy the people. They just need to follow through and do their part. And they didn't.
They didn't.
And then they had all these problems.
So these are the warnings that God gives them. All right? I'm a jealous God. I'm an all-consuming fire. Obey these statutes and ordinances. You know, I think about it in today's time. You know, there's the idea of I want to obey God's will because I love him. I want to do his will. I know that I can be blessed in the end. But I also want to obey God because I'm scared. I'm fearful of what will happen to me. And sometimes I don't think that gets translated into the minds of some who have obeyed Christ. The idea that you should have a fear of God because you're either going to be saved or you're not. Right? He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. He who does not believe shall be condemned. One of two ways you're going to go. All right? To be thinking about that. And this idea that I should want to obey God because I love him. I want to be blessed, but I need to obey God because I need to fear him. He is the Almighty. He is sovereign authority. So God's message to his people. He wants you to listen and obey, but he wants you to understand it's by me being God. It's not because of you that things will happen. So this idea of listen and obey, that this is by God and not by man. Well, what do I mean by that? Let me ask y'all that question first. What do I mean by that? If I say, when I put that title, by God, not by man, when he's talking to them, you know, these things will happen by God, not by man, what does that mean? We'll see that in the verses.
God will be with them, but they will be men fighting the war. In one place, though, it was like the walls of Jericho come down, and God did that.
Mm-hmm.
they accomplished would not be because of their goodness, because of God.
Yes.
That would be instruments, but it's going to be because of God.
That idea of being an instrument, that's kind of the idea that I'm thinking of. You know, they are the instrument. They are the tool to accomplish God's will. This is, they are a reflection of God. They are a representation of God and what He would have them do. But the idea that this plan He has, we're going to see that in these verses. They are instruments. Look over at Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy 7, this is a little longer of a reading, but I think it does a good job of explaining some things. Verse 17, if you should say in your heart, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them? You shall not be afraid of them. You shall well remember that the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt. The great trials which your eyes saw and the signs and the wonders and the mighty hand and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out. So shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet against them until those who are left and hide themselves from you perish. You shall not dread them, for the Lord your God is in your midst, a great and awesome God. The Lord your God will clear away these nations before you little by little. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beasts would grow too numerous for you. But the Lord your God will deliver them before you and will throw them into great confusion until they are destroyed. It's God helping them dispossess the land. He goes on and says in verse 2, he says that, you know, there, seven nations are greater and stronger than you. But it's God. It's the Lord who's going to clear away these people. It's God who's going to deliver the land. Look over at Deuteronomy 9:4. Ask the question, why will Israel possess this land, and what does God emphasize here? So as this is the background of the United Kingdom, let's think about that. They are a chosen people. When we think about that, these are God's chosen people there. But why are they chosen? What does He say about them? Do not say in your heart that when the Lord your God has driven them out before you, because of my righteousness, the Lord has brought me in and to possess this land. But, so there's this not but statement. Excuse me. But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is dispossessing them before you. It is not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart that you are going to possess their land. But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God is driving them out before you in order to confirm the oath which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Know then, it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess. For you are a stubborn people. They're His chosen people. There's that contrast here, or I say contrast. There's an emphasis on the, it's because of the wickedness of them. Does that mean they weren't righteous? Doesn't mean they weren't righteous, but it's because of the wickedness of the nation. And He recognizes and tells them, you are a stubborn people. When we see that, they're recounting them coming out of Egypt. And what their fathers did, and how you've seen all these things, and you were still wicked, you were stubborn. This is not because you are so great, because you are so righteous. This is because these people are wicked. These things will happen not because of you. They will happen because of God, and it's God's will. Look over at Deuteronomy 7. Why were the Israelites loved and chosen? So there's that question. Why were they chosen then? We saw in chapter 9, but chapter 7 spells it out pretty good too. His covenant, that was why. Verse 7, it says, chapter 7, verse 7, the Lord did not set His love on you. I want to back up. Because He says in verse 6, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for His own possession out of the peoples who are of the face of the earth. I have chosen you. The Lord did not set His love on you. So here's His explanation. Nor choose you because you were more in number than any of the peoples, for you were the fewest of all peoples. We talked about how they were lesser of a nation than the nations they were going to drive out. But because the Lord loved you and kept the oath which He swore to your forefathers, we just saw that in Deuteronomy 9:5, the covenant that He made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The Lord brought you out by a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery, from the hand of the Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord your God, He is the God, He is God, the faithful God who keeps His covenant and His loving kindness to a thousandth generation with those who love Him and keep His commandments. There's a purpose behind them being the chosen people. He'd made a covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And He's going to fulfill that covenant. That covenant will be fulfilled in three different parts. Ultimately, the last part being in Christ Jesus and through the lineage. All right, He will keep that covenant. Now, He can choose. He could have chosen any people. He chose them because of that covenant. So they are special people because God chose them to be, not because of any inherent qualities that they had. I think about this idea of being an instrument. And Kisa has a quote from Sunday Ayindari when he was here. And there's more to it than this. But I think about God's perfect plan is carried out by imperfect people. And his quote's a lot more articulate and a little bit more in depth. But that's kind of the idea, is that God's perfect plan is carried out by imperfect people. And the Israelites weren't perfect. They were an instrument for God to carry out a plan. And we're going to go on and see this idea of being imperfect and what they did. But God who's to be exalted in this. God who's keeping His covenant with His people. These people aren't perfect. And that'll be a kind of an underlying thing as we get into the study of the United Kingdom is, you know, God's perfect plan being carried out by imperfect people. Why Saul? Why David? Why Solomon? Why is David so revered? He's a man after God's own heart. But look at some of the things that he did. You think about Saul. You think about Solomon. You know, perfect plan, imperfect people. We'll look at that in a little while. But the idea is that God's will is to be done. He chose them, and it will be done in that way. But it's done by God, not by any inherentness of the Israelites, the Hebrew nation. Questions or comments? Yes. He is a faithful God. You think about it later on. So I'm going to rely on your Bible knowledge. You've got as much, if not more Bible. Well, I know you got more Bible knowledge than I do looking in the audience. You think about further on. You think about God's will be accomplished one way or another. We know that there's the rise and fall of the nations. We know that they go into captivity. But I think that the concept of His will be done. I think about Esther. You think of how on a knife's edge that the balance hung. But was there ever any doubt that God would come through with His covenant with Abraham? That God would come through and His will be accomplished? No. You see the providence there. You can look back on a lot of things and see God's working through people. But God's will be accomplished. It's not because of any righteousness or inherent greatness in the people. It's because He wants it to be done. God is in control of all things. All right, so this is what the United Kingdom, this is what the nation is built on. Doing my will, listening to my statutes and my ordinances, following it day in and day out, because if you do so, I will bless you. But remember that I'm a jealous God. So follow me or you'll be punished. And remember that it's because of me that you will survive, you will succeed, you will be blessed. And if you don't follow me, then you will be punished, you won't succeed. So I put on there, and then what happened? And this is kind of the lead up to the United Kingdom. And we'll have a background as to more of this in the next class. But so we see that they enter the land. So we see that one of the three covenants, the three promises made is fulfilled in that they took the land. Joshua led them in. Moses didn't go in. Joshua took them in, and God's promises were fulfilled. And then we see that in the time of Joshua and the elders who survived Joshua, Israel served God. They did it faithfully. But, and that's what I have there, Judges 2. So let's look at Judges 2, and this will kind of lead into our next class. So they were obedient, and I put for a while. But Judges 2, 1 through 3, the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim, And he said, I brought you out of Egypt and led you into the land I have sworn to your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And as for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall tear down their altars, but you have not obeyed me. What is this you have done? Therefore, I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they will become as thorns in your sides and their gods will be a snare to you. God was going to keep his covenant, but they didn't keep their covenant with God. And so we can see that the Israelites were disobedient. And what was the results of their disobedience? What do we see in the second chapter of Judges?
They served the
Baals. They served the Baals, and what happened? They suffered. What's the cycle? What's the cycle in Judges? We can say it louder, guys. I mean, come on. Okay. Sin, suffering, supplication, and salvation, if I got that right. That's what happens here. You know, we see that verse 10, all the generations also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord. Verse 11, the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. Verse 13, they forsook the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtaroth. Verse 14, the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he gave them into the hands of plunderers who plundered them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies and around them so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. And verse 15, it says, so that they were severely distressed. Verse 18, the Lord was moved by their pity and their groaning because of those who had oppressed and afflicted them. They've been oppressed and afflicted. The idea that they stopped doing what they were supposed to, and so these other nations were thorns. They were the tool in which to punish and to judge the nation, God's nation. That's what happened. They were punished. All right. And so how it went for a while, we see that it was that kind of that cycle. And God brought these judges. Verse 16, and the Lord raised up judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. Verse 18, when the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with their judge and delivered them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. But then they kind of fell back. It says, verse 19, it came about when the judge died, they would turn back and act more correctly than their fathers in following other gods to serve them and bow down to them. They did not abandon their practices or their stubborn ways. God knew they were a stubborn people. He gives them these rules. Be obedient to them and you will be blessed. He gives us rules. Be obedient to them and you will be blessed. We're going to talk about the idea of free will. We're going to talk about the idea of selfishness. We need to be thinking about that as we see that in the Hebrew nation. Ultimately, what happens from the United Kingdom? Give me a summary of what happens after Solomon or during the time of Solomon. After Solomon, the kingdom divides. Yes, so ultimately, God's told them, if you do these things, I will bless you. But if not, I will punish you. What's interesting to me is he spells this out. We're going to see this later about the kings. He spells out what's going to happen with the kings and what they're going to do with the king. But he tells them right up front, if you do this, you'll be blessed. If not, here's what's going to happen. Here are the consequences. And they just would not listen. They sinned against the Lord. They walked in the customs of the other nations. I'm trying to read notes. Let me just flip over to 2 Kings. We got a couple minutes left. In 2 Kings 17, it says, now this came about because the sons of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God. This is when they fell. Verse 8 of 17, it says, and they walked in the customs of the nations whom the Lord had driven out because of the sons of Israel, and in the customs of the kings of Israel which they had introduced. Essentially, they served idols, this idolatry. They did other things. They intermarried. They did a bunch of things. But I think about in that time and then in the time of Judah, the nation of Judah, but how many prophets were sent? How many prophets were sent continually? And Second Chronicles talks about that. Second Chronicles 36, when it talks about the fall of Judah. Second Chronicles 36:12, he said, this is Zedekiah He did evil in the sight of the Lord his God. He did not humble himself before Jeremiah the prophet who spoke for the Lord. He also rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar. Furthermore, all the officials and the priests and the people were unfaithful, following all the abominations of the nations, and they defiled the house of the Lord, which he had sanctified in Jerusalem. I just told you to be obedient to me, and you will be blessed. What do you need? Like, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to multiply you. You're going to have all the stuff that you want. Why in the world would you go over here? I'm giving you everything. I've shown you through signs and wonders and miracles. You've taken this land. You know what your forefathers did. I've given you all this. And here's how you treat me. You're unfaithful and you follow these abominations, which, by the way, as idols, did nothing. Nothing. It puzzles me. And yet we do that today, where we are willing to be a slave to the things in our life as opposed to put God first. But verse 15, the God of their fathers sent word to them again and again by his messengers, because he had compassion on them, on his people, and on his dwelling place. But they continually mocked the messengers of God, despised his word, and scoffed at his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord arose against his people, until there was no remedy. And so they were taken into captivity. There were the three waves, 70 years, and then the remnant came out, but they were never the nation they were before. Now, that's what happened after the fact. We're going to look at what the nation looked like in the next chapter. We're going to look at what the nation looked like when we led up to the time of the kings. We're going to look at some of the pitfalls and how bad things were and how we ended up with the United Kingdom. But let that be a warning to us today, too. You know, God's given us the inspired word. We have his messengers. We have his prophets here for our understanding and for our learning. Let's be mindful of that too. So, all right. So that's an introduction to the lesson. That's the what I wanted to cover this morning. Let's understanding the establishment of the king of that nation and what God would have them to do. So next week, that's wishful thinking. Wednesday, background. We're gonna dive back into Judges and kind of look at the state of the nation as we lead up to the United Kingdom, and we'll see some things about it. That's all for this morning. Thank you.